it gave us something, a common piece. It almost started to give us something to fight for. And that's what that identity for me truly does for us after you start establishing it, is it gives us something to fight for. If you don't have an identity as a crew, what are you doing?
Firehouse Vigilance presents The Weekly Scrap, a podcast dedicated to the never-ending fight against complacency.
Corley Moore, Firehouse Vigilance, Weekly Scrap, number 205. My guest tonight is none other than Jeremy Sanders. Most people know him best as Crew First Culture. He has served 21 years with the Edmond Fire Department in Oklahoma, where he currently holds the rank of captain. Jeremy is married to his beautiful wife, Erica, lives on a small farm just outside of Tulsa. They are the parents of eight kids, one grandson. In 2020, he created Crew First Culture and the Crew First Culture podcast, in which he shares the importance of the pursuit of daily personal growth and making a positive impact on those around us. My brother, Jeremy Sanders, it is my honor and pleasure to have you on as the guest of Weekly Scrap number 205. Welcome, my brother.
Thanks, man. I'm excited beyond anything I can describe to be on here. Looking forward to it. I've looked forward to this for a long time, and glad it worked out, and excited to be here with you.
Dude, I love it. I've been wanting to have you. The thing is in my head, you'd always been on early. You'd been one of the original guests, and then it's my fault kind of, because one day I called you up and said, hey, my guest and I had to back out. Do you want to come on? And you came on. And we kind of did just an ad hoc. We kind of read some quotes and talked about them. It wasn't really like what was on your topics, or it was just kind of the thing we threw together. It was great, don't get me wrong, but you never got to come on and do your thing. And so in my head, you'd always been one of the originals. But anyway, so
I'm proud to be the first, you know, to go from pinch hitter to actual starter, you know, in your lineup. So it's quite a turnaround.
No, it's awesome. It is awesome. And I wish I would have done it sooner. So I'm very glad you were here. Is there anything I missed in the intro? Anything you'd like to add?
Nope, man. I'm pretty simple and basic, and that's about it.
Awesome. Well, people are logging in. They are already making tons of comments. Sam getting things running. Sam runs everything behind the scenes. Everybody is getting to know Sam as he runs the scrap, makes it run smooth. And I threw curveballs at him right before we started. I said, hey, let's run a pre-hype video. He goes, you got one ready? I said, no, just grab one off the internet. And so anyway, we're working with new stuff, making it happen, improving the quality of the stream, and adding new things. So if there's any glitches and mess-ups, it's mostly on trying to make stuff happen. Quick announcements out the gate. If you want to be a part of the Vigilantes, go to firehousevigilance.com and sign up. Become an exclusive member of the Cool Kids Club. We do so much stuff, including the after party, which we do at the end of every scrap, the scrap after party, where you can come in. The guest is always invited. So, Jeremy, you're invited to the scrap after party. It's 20 minutes usually after the show is over, and we sit there and have a discussion and critique how well you did. So it's a lot of fun. But and that's where the Vigilantes will be afterwards. Now, on to the sponsors. The OG sponsor of the scrap, Keyhose. Check them out online at keyhose.com and follow them on Facebook. Affordable Drill Towers, home of the Affordable Drill Tower and the Affordable Standpipe Prop. Firefighter owned and operated, you can pump and roll using the Affordable Standpipe Prop. The Affordable Standpipe Prop fits through most classroom doorways for standpipe theory, and then you can roll it out into the parking lot and pump it. It comes with 6 standpipe valves that can be upgraded to PRVs or customized to what you have in your jurisdiction. Call Steve, 844-55-TOWER, or drop an email to info@affordabledrilltowers.com. Firefighter safety and accountability starts with being able to quickly find and identify individual firefighters operating on the fire ground. Identifier Safety combines the best in photoluminescent materials for durable firefighter identification solutions that can glow for up to 20 hours with no switches, no batteries, which means being able to rapidly identify firefighters by name, unit, or assignment, even under hot fire conditions. Firefighter created, owned, and operated Identifier Safety is the home for all of your on-scene identification needs, all specifically designed and tested for the rigors of the job. Be seen on scene, identifiersafety.com, or sales@identifiersafety.com. And there you go. All of the sponsors out of the way, people logging in, curveballs thrown. I'm going to read a few comments as we get going. Brian Brush said, could not be more fired up for this one. I witnessed his switch flip when we asked him to speak to the recruits. It's awesome. Strong mustache game coming at you. Carpe Fuego saying, and Amanda Miller saying, strong stash game. Did you get that Seagrave? People asking questions. Great dude on here tonight from Kyle Romagus. All right. So people are fired up. Audience is here. Audience, Kyle Romagus is fielding your questions. He is looking at him. He's looking at him in Facebook. He's looking at him in YouTube, and he's throwing them on the laptop right here beside me. So please get them ready and throw them at Kyle so we can throw them at Jeremy. And with all that being said, let's kick it off.
Let's go.
I'm super excited. I always ask my guests, what topics would you like to talk about? And right out the gate, we are perfectly made for an exceptional purpose. And I love the statement you sent me, and I want to just kind of start right there and see where you want to go with it.
Man, I try to kind of describe it a little bit or put some words to it when I sent that to you, because it's kind of a weird thing. You know, you just get these thoughts in your head, and sometimes they're just things that you need to write down because they become something else in the future. But sometimes it's like, man, there is something to this. You know, I don't know what it is. You know, I don't know if this is a beginning of a new class or what, but those words have kind of come to me here recently. And, you know, we're going to get into, I'm sure, a lot of kind of the workings behind the scenes of all that. But 2023 has been a really, really weird year for me, and, you know, some ups and downs and goods and bads. And it seems like so many times purpose and mental resiliency and connection and, you know, a lot of different things keep coming up, keep hitting me in the face. And purpose has really become something that, man, I feel so attached to, so driven by to explore and to really kind of get other people involved in what they have as a purpose. And so to me, that's kind of how that evolved, is we are all perfectly made for an extraordinary purpose. And as screwed up as we all might be, and as much as I mess up and many mistakes as I make, and how much better I wish I was, I am still perfectly made for the purpose that I was sent here to do. And that's not just a run of the mill purpose. It's an extraordinary purpose. And that's not me. That's all of us. We are all here perfectly given everything that we needed to fulfill that purpose. But, you know, there's a lot of work to get to the point where you even know what that is and get to the, you know, get to where you can actually do some good with it. So that's kind of where it came from. I don't know what it is yet, but like you said, it really speaks to me. And I think there's something with it that needs to be kind of drawn out for sure.
No, I love it. And when you ask, and when you say purpose, because I love the word purpose and I want to dig in on it. Are you talking a specific, like, or individual? Like, everybody's is individual and different, or is there a shared purpose, or is it something you're still working through and figuring out?
No, I mean, purpose in general, obviously, anything that you can tie purpose to, you're going to be in a good shape. You're going to be in good shape, whether it's you have a purpose that your crew kind of knows and goes by and searches for, pursues, or that. But for me, really what I'm talking about and really what I really have dug into a lot is just our individual purpose. You know, just truly figuring out what it is that we are here for. And, you know, I get that it's probably been so overly just trivialized and commercialized by the movies and TV of life's purpose and finding out, you know, what all that, but it's so deeper than just the surface crap of what's the meaning of life and all that. I truly believe that we have all obviously lived different lives. We've all have different stories, different challenges, different everything, different opportunities. And each of us comes into today with an amazing array of material and stories and experiences that we can share to make a difference in other people's lives. And I feel like, you know, that might not sum up everybody's purpose exactly.
Right.
It's pretty close to what I would say mine is. But if you can start getting an idea of how your role plays in that, where you're impacting others' lives, where you're making a difference in other people's lives, that's what I'm talking about. Just truly making a difference in the people that are around you.
No, I love it, man. I love it. Very passionate about it and fulfilling your purpose and finding that purpose. Have you discovered anything that's helped you Have you discovered anything that's helped you define your purpose or made it clear for you?
Yeah, I mean, I feel like there's definitely there's definitely some things that you're going to have to do. A lot of it is just reflection, just some honest self-reflection. I feel like you almost kind of got to figure out who you are first. If you don't know who you are or what you stand for, you're definitely not going to get to the point of you know, what you're doing here and why you are here to serve what purpose. And so just reflecting on who you are, coming up with an identity that you feel comfortable with. And something else with that is an identity that isn't in something that can be taken away. You know, a lot of us, we love the fire service so much, and it's such an addictive thing sometimes to people. And I do too. I truly do. But when we wrap our identity up completely in being a firefighter, that's something that can be taken away. And so if that's all you have, if that's all you've ever been is a firefighter, and one day you're not, then what are you? You're left with a huge hole right away that is going to cause you some issues. So I am a firefighter. I love being a firefighter. I cannot imagine doing anything else. I'm not equipped to do anything else, but it's really just a vehicle that has helped me to pursue other things like growth and connection with others and networking and my purpose. And so that's kind of, you know, that identity piece of it is truly figuring out who you are. And then I think one of the easiest things, and I believe it was Steve Harvey. I watch a lot of videos and listen to a lot of stuff. You know, I listen to a lot of audiobooks and things right. like that. But Steve Harvey, I think on one of them said, you know, to start discovering what your purpose is, just look at what you do exceptionally well, like what you do the best with the least amount of effort and energy. And that'll kind of tell you what you at least give you a starting point. And so I think there's a lot to be said about that.
Right.
So if you're doing something, especially if there are good things associated with that. And so I think, you know, just a few of those things right there is definitely a good start to figuring that out.
I love it. I really do love it. I love the message behind it. Purpose driven. Ready for your first question coming from the audience.
All right.
First curveball coming at you. James Michalisco wants to know, Jeremy, every firefighter, let alone every fire officer, is faced with situations where they may have to display moral courage. As a captain, can you give us an example when you had to display moral courage and advice on how to handle it?
Moral courage. Man, this is a question you need like an hour or two to sit there thinking about it.
Just to break it down.
I'm glad you start off with a really easy question.
Just soft tosses. Just coming from thank James coming out of Indianapolis. Go ahead.
Man, I think that first of all, going back to that identity, if we don't have that solid foundation of knowing who we are, what we stand for, what we can bend on, what we can't, then when it comes to these situations, which is obviously a pretty touchy situation, our chances of making the right choice or doing the right thing are going to be very limited, very small, because we haven't done that work up front. So definitely doing that work ahead of time so that when those things come up, it's almost like your muscle memory for your moral thinking type compass type issue. But to be honest, I my mind does not think that quickly on something like this. I'm not saying that there hasn't been anything, but for me, I think, and I'll just throw something out there to at least answer it, so I'm not copping out here, but there's been a lot of times where, even especially when I was a younger officer, I stood up for things thinking that I was doing the right thing, thinking that I was standing up for my people, thinking that I was not going to be pushed around by administration because of something I didn't agree with or whatever else. So to me, I viewed that as times where I don't know if you could really tie morals to it, but I felt like I was standing at least on principles. You know, I was standing firm and I was being a good officer because of it. Now, in hindsight, I look at those situations and it's like, first of all, those things you were complaining about and throwing a fit about, they were stupid. First of all, it didn't matter. Nobody really cared. Nobody really, you know, it's not like I gained street rep for doing that. But what I guarantee you I did do is I lost a lot of voice with those people above me. You know, I lost a lot of input chances, because when you start becoming that person that speaks out and is always trying to ruffle people's feathers, well, when you do have something important to bring up, it just gets lost in all the other stuff you've been doing. So I definitely had to learn that even if I can justify it in my own head that I'm doing something that should be done, that is right to do, if I'm not doing it in the right ways, if I'm doing it for something that it isn't truly worth that, you know, playing of the cards or using that little bit of in the bank that I could be saving for something else,
right,
then it doesn't need to be done. So I know I didn't directly answer the moral aspect of it, but I feel like that is kind of tied to that for sure.
No, that's awesome, man. No, there's good. There's some good questions coming here. I like this one. It circles back to the purpose. And I want to circle back to it while we're just coming off of it, even though we had the curveball in between. Carpe Fuego says, do you feel that there is an aspect to being an officer that requires you to draw out each crew member's individual purpose? Or is it enough to make your own vision or purpose for their crew clear? Like the purpose for the crew, or is it more about developing their individual?
Yes.
The great answer.
I firmly believe in both. I firmly believe that just on the surface, you know, my job as an officer is to bring a clear. Well, okay. So I'm going to back up and just tell a little bit of the reason why I stick with purpose.
Okay. Cause
it's about to come into play here. So I get myself so twisted up on words sometimes, like if there's a word, if there's a couple words that mean similar, but they're completely different in some ways, I wrap my head around that forever. Purpose and mission have been, or I'm sorry, mission and vision have been those two words forever.
Right.
I have talked to people that I truly respect that have a completely different opinion on those. You know, some of them think it mission is this and some type of vision is this. And then you got others that are completely backwards. So I've just basically thrown those out. It's just purpose for me.
Okay. You
know, that's so just to let everybody know, that's kind of what I use in the place of those. So going back to the question, I have to have that purpose for my crew. I have to have something for us to see as far as this is what we're striving for. This is why we're here. This is what we are trying to accomplish. So I think just in general, that's something that officers need to have. as far as just me personally, and this is not something that, I've definitely not taken out of any classes or anything like that, definitely not books, but me personally, I think just as important of me as an officer is to really build my people up in every way, not just better skills as a firefighter, better just confidence doing their jobs, but truly building better people and working through life together, trying to figure out how to each become the best and reach each other's potential. And that goes along with it, you know, trying to figure out what I can do to help each person in their own little way figure these things out. And that part of it is pretty new for me, I will say. So, you know, I don't want to say anything on here that you might talk to somebody that I work with and they're like, well, I haven't really heard them say much about that. We talk a lot about purpose as far as the crew and, you know, and culture and things like that. I talk a lot about connection and we spend a lot of time working on that in relationships. As far as the actual precise purpose piece of that, it is something that I am trying to kind of behind the scenes incorporate right now. You know,
okay.
If I see something like, for instance, I've got several people that are really, really interested and excited about EMS now in my crew. But just a few months ago, I had one, you know, and super smart, and he loves the aspect of EMS, which in the fire service is like, dude, I got to do everything I can not to cause him to lose this. You know, we have to keep this going because you just don't have that very often. But he became interested in mass casualty triage type things and start talking about wanting to build a class and build protocol and things like that for our department. And so that right there is like alarms going off. It's like, this is something that I need to try to facilitate whatever I can do. Not that I'm going to do it for him or even with him, but I'm definitely going to see what I can do to maybe kind of keep him going in it, keep him motivated.
Right. Right. To encourage it, resources
he needs. Right. So yeah. And that's kind of my, I guess, my take on that. I think they're both very, very important of the company officer.
No, beautiful, beautiful answer. Beautiful question. Please keep the questions coming. I like throwing them at Jeremy and keeping him on his toes. Timothy Wood wants to know, how young is too young to be an officer?
Oh, man.
Nothing but curveballs, baby. Nothing but curveballs.
Golly. I don't know there is an age on anything. You know, I remember being asked when I was new, I think I had a year on or so, and they asked me, you know, how long do you have to be on to not be considered a new boy? You can't say that anymore, but that's what we said back then. And I just said, well, I don't know. I mean, maybe until other people come behind me, maybe until, you know, I don't know. And really their answer was basically it's not a time frame. It has nothing to do with the amount of time you've been on, the amount of fires you've been to, the amount of experience that you may or may not have. It's more of a mindset thing. It's more of a maturity thing. Like I'm losing the word here. IQ and EQ, emotional maturity.
Okay, yeah,
maturity, you know, that type of thing. And I truly kind of grabbed a hold of that. And I think that you could say the same about officers. You know, we just looking at my department, just because that's what I know the most. We've got some pretty young officers, but I would say most of them are so squared away and have done such a good job through their career of just preparing themselves that I've never had any concerns about them. We've also had some officers that are, you know, get into that job a little bit later in their career. And it does not have anything to do with how comfortable, you know, I would feel working under them. I just don't think that you can really tie age to any of it. You definitely want some experience. You definitely want to have somebody that has kind of worked through a few years of at least some informal leadership and mentorship and building the newer people up below them. And so I think that's very important. But as far as what I think is most important, it's all that behind the scene, behind, you know, the 6 inches between your ears type stuff that truly makes a difference and tells you when you're ready.
Dude, I love it. I love the answer, man. And a simple question, like you said, they keep them
coming. No, there ain't no simple questions here.
Carpe Fuego coming at you again says, how do you pick your battles? She hits different. She goes back and forth, hitting different topics you've been touching on. But in that battle to be consistent, and in that struggle to do the right thing, how do you pick your battles, especially when you feel like you're spinning your tires?
Well, I will say that first of all, you're going to screw up a lot. You're going to make a lot of mistakes. You're going to pick the wrong battles a lot. You're going to pick the wrong battle that you should have set out on. And now you have no energy when it comes to the real one that you need to be standing firm on. So that has been something that I've had to learn over and over and over again. But for me now, I think that I just have to weigh everything. And truly, I talk about this a lot, is when I came to the station I'm at right now, there was a lot of work that had to be done. I was just a 6 month captain. I had no experience. I didn't know really how to do anything. You know, the only thing I had going for me is I knew where I wanted us to be. I knew what I wanted our crew to look like eventually. And so just over time, I realized, and this wasn't because I just figured it out. It was years down the road. I realized kind of what was helpful was that when I had that picture in my mind of the culture that I wanted us to build, create, maintain, I could judge everything off of that. And so if something came up, okay, if everybody's just freaking worn out today and nobody's feeling training, okay, you know, I speak very often, very continuously about trying to stay consistent with training every day, trying to do something. But there are days when it just doesn't happen. That my job is to minimize those the very best I can. And thankfully now I've got a crew full of people that kind of help me maintain that when I'm not feeling it. But some days that's just the right thing to do. Just, you know, maybe we'll sit and have 30, 45 minutes extra at breakfast at the table that we're just talking and communicating and connecting. You know what? If that's what we get done that day, and, you know, you could just tell that this is not a good time to really push anything with everybody. Okay, that's good. You know, there are days where we've just been worn out with calls and things like that. Get towards the end of the day, you don't have any training done, but we go play some cornhole, and man, that brings us together and we enjoy that. And that builds camaraderie and unity. And that's a huge win. And so I've learned that I have to be okay with that. I've learned that nothing just goes by the book. You do have to weigh the conditions of these choices. And so when I am looking at that, we're looking at something that, you know, is this something I want to fight, or is this something that I think can be okay right here? I think it's just judging it off of that vision and that purpose for the crew or for yourself. If it's going to get me farther away from that, then I don't need to do it, or I need to stand against it, whatever it is to stop it. If it's going to get me closer to it, then I need to focus on putting energy into it. I need to accomplish that. And so that's kind of just been my meter to kind of help me stay as close to on track as I can. Right. Because like I said, man, I don't know how to do this stuff. I don't know how to rebuild a culture. I don't know how to truly create an amazing crew. I've just been lucky enough to kind of figure it out a little bit over time with some other great people. But that's been a very good tool that we've used to do that.
Awesome. No, and you said, and it's one of those things where you can get frustrated with yourself because you feel like you're not hitting those things because feel like count, you know, like I didn't get enough stuff done today, and you're harder on yourself because you feel like you let them down, you know, that just holding that bar, and you got to recognize what actually matters.
And to be honest, you know, we actually had a day like this just a couple weeks ago. It was a weekend, which, okay, right out of the gate, you know, how many crews actually train on the weekend? And I'm not going to fight that fight right here, but that is a day for us. It's just a day. So we're going to try to do something, but we didn't that day, man. I was completely freaking exhausted in every way, emotionally, mentally, physically, everything. My body was hurting and I just didn't have anything, and nobody really pushed anything. And so it just didn't happen. And I took that home over 4 days off. And, you know, I kind of took that, I held myself personally responsible for that. And I really kind of beat myself up for it. But, you know, I tell my kids this all the time. I can't expect everything I do to be perfect. You know, I can't expect to truly never miss a beat. I'm going to have days where I just don't have it in me to push it. And if there's nobody else to take that up, then it might get dropped. And so is that what I want? Is that how I want things to happen? No, absolutely not. But, you know, I just talked to a good friend, Mark Mikowski, yesterday, and he kind of ended the conversation with, well, at the end of the day, what you did today was enough. And that just kind of spoke to me as that's this. You know, I didn't do what I should have, but we did have a good day. We did do some things that had some behind the scenes, you know, effects that kind of kept us together and helped us enjoy each other. And so at the end of the day, that's enough.
Right.
I will do better the next day. But today I'm going to bed. That's enough. So I just, and I say that not being completely a master of that saying. I have to have that fight with myself all the time.
The struggle, the eternal struggle.
Yeah.
Absolutely, man. And no, and it's not an excuse to just lower the bar and say, hey, doesn't matter what we did at the end of the day, it's enough. That's not the point. But I absolutely love the mindset of that trending upwards and, hey, tomorrow's a new day. Yeah. No matter what you got done today. It works even in the opposite, man. I don't care if you just absolutely crushed it today. Tomorrow you start over. And yeah I mean, so I love it. I love it. Okay, so many more coming at you. Oh, that's an ongoing question. I won't throw that one on you just yet. Brent Thorne wants to know, with preparing future leaders, do you go out of your way to pick a protege, or do you let them come to you?
No, man, I don't. That this is something that I guess you could kind of tie it to the whole formal mentorship program type thing, which my department is trying to establish. And man, I'm having such a hard time wrapping my head around it. I just don't know what to think about it. I don't know what to think about that formal aspect. I don't know what to think about, you know, how your mentors and your, I hate saying a word, but mentee, whatever, how they're picked. I just don't know. For me, I feel like I'm going to do whatever I can to try to make a difference in whoever's life I'm around. I'm going to try to, if I see a teaching moment, try to be intentional about taking advantage of that teaching moment. If I see somebody that I see a lot of potential in, and I know I can do something to help them or give them an opportunity, I'm going to be intentional about doing that and trying to offer that to them. If people come to me, then I'm more than happy to be that as well. And so I don't think that I would ever just go find somebody and like, hey, man, I want to be your mentor. You know what I mean? And maybe that's not kind of what they meant by the question, but that's not me. Mm-hmm. I am much, much more comfortable just being the informal person that I'll teach you what I know, but I want to learn something from you too. And that's how this is going to go. I will share everything I have, especially, and this is where it's the most important, especially the mistakes and the things I've messed up. Because if you're viewing mentorship as just, you know, you're telling somebody how to further his career in good ways and telling them your successes and all that, man, you're missing so much of that boat. You got to share all of the stuff, all of it. And maybe even more so the negative, because when I share those, I'm hoping that it's going to lead into them not having to make those same mistakes as I did. And so I hope that I answered that question pretty well. I think it's just and we'll probably touch on it again later, but for me, the statement planting seeds, that's been another one of those big, just kind of earworms. It just has been in my head for a long time. I feel like I am responsible for planting seeds, whatever that looks like. If it's sharing a little bit of knowledge or experience or some mistakes I made or trying to maybe inspire somebody in a particular way, all I can do is plant that seed. I have no control over what happens at that point. It's not mine to make sure that it grows or what time frame it grows, but I am responsible for planting a seed. That is my job. And so I think that is probably the best answer I can throw at that is any situation that I see a place that I can plant a seed, I am trying to be intentional constantly to do that.
And doing so. That's good. And just to let you know, there's already been quite a few max points go by from the audience. Just to let you know, you've been crushing the answers according to the audience so far. And I'm going to use that to segue into one of your topics you want to talk about, because it's kind of on topic right now, which is using our story to make an impact on others. The importance of vulnerability and transparency, man. Two words that aren't, I mean, everybody begs for transparency, don't get me wrong, especially from their leadership. But vulnerability especially is not a word that's tossed around easily or lightly in the fire service.
Exactly. Yeah, I have talked about this so much, and I hope people that do kind of catch a little bit of what I put out there, I hope they don't get tired of it. But this has made such a huge impact on my life. I have to keep bringing it up because it's tied to everything. But when I met Rick George and the guys on his instructor cadre, the tactical resiliency training guys, I was completely blown away in such an unexpected, just an unexpected way, because of the combination of strength and vulnerability that they possessed. And I think you talked about two words, you know, that are maybe not spoken about. When you talk about two words that are completely opposite, you can't get much more opposite than vulnerability and strength.
Yes.
You know, if you looked them up in a dictionary, they're basically the exact opposite. Vulnerability is you are capable of being hurt. Strength is, well, you're exuding something that is hopefully keeping you from getting hurt. But the people that are able to master that, it is such an amazing magnetic quality that I really started to see manifest right there. But to sit and see these guys truly just lay their life out on the table for brand new students that they didn't even know, sharing that vulnerability because they knew by the end of this class, they're going to need that vulnerability back from the students, because that was a huge piece of that class. It was life-changing for me. to see how incredible it made me feel towards them. I just met these people and I'm like, I want to hang out with you all the time. Just that's the type of people I want to be with now. I want to be with real people that talk about real stuff and that care about the things that other people around them are saying. And when they say, how are you doing? They're stopping and paying attention to their answer. They're not saying it as they go. They're truly connected and involved in each other's life. And that piece of, you know, that you brought up our story, and I kind of mentioned it earlier, but you can't replicate my story. You can't replicate your story. It is so unique. And the crazy thing about it is no matter what is in the midst of all that, no matter what it's comprised of, the good, the bad, whatever, there's somebody out there that needs to hear something that you have that you've lived through, whether it's somebody that just needs to know, okay, I'm not the only one that deals with this, or somebody that needs to know, okay, he went through this and he made it out of it. He faced this same struggle I'm facing right now. And yeah, it was a hard, hard road. And it might have taken a long time, but he did it. So I can do it. Just having that little bit of connection with somebody that you might never know, that you might never even truly, you know, hear it made that kind of an impact on somebody. So you just don't know who you do start sharing it. And I think that going back to, you know, some of the station officer questions, man, if you are a station officer and you're working off the mindset of I have to be, you know, strong and steady and not show any faults and not show any mistakes or cracks so that my people will follow me, man, I don't want to be around you. That's the last person I want to work with.
I have to be infallible.
That's not real. That's there's nobody that is going to truly embody that. It's just a persona that we're putting out there. And so I want to be with the people that are real. I want to be with the people that say, hey, I struggle with this too, man. These are some things that, you know, I kind of started using some techniques that helped me. Let me show you. Or, you know, whatever it is, I think that by doing that, we're setting our people up to understand it's okay to mess up. It's okay to not be perfect. It's okay to struggle with something. Because when I am on the other end of that and have the infallible persona, you know, I'm probably building up people that think they better be that way. Mm. And when they do face something that is hard, you are putting them below the water before they can even have a chance to start swimming, because they don't know that that's a normal thing.
No, that's solid. Beautiful, man. And it all starts with that vulnerability and ability to just look in the mirror, be wrong and be honest. Go ahead.
No, well, I know you were kind of looking at maybe another question, but something else that kind of goes along with that is, you know, when you're doing some of this reflection stuff that I talked about earlier, what were the moments that truly made you the person you are today? The moments that maybe people didn't even see, the moments that truly made a difference in your life, whether that was good or bad, or the things that had an impact on you, good or bad. What are those moments that truly built you into the person you are right now? And thinking of that stuff and truly kind of understanding this is why I'm like this. This is okay. This is what I have. It is what it is. And so now I have the opportunity to use it to share with somebody else. I think that you're almost, I guess for lack of better terms, you're almost giving your weaknesses, your your failures, all of these things, a purpose themselves. When you go through something that's bad, but you give that a purpose by using it to help others, man, that makes it all worth it. It's so much better than keeping it inside, because then you're basically, you went through it for nothing.
Right.
You might have grown, but that's it. You know, you aren't helping others with it.
Beautiful, man. Okay. More questions coming from the audience. Man, there's some good ones too buried in here. Crew first culture. I mean, I we'll dig into some of that, I'm sure. But Adam Haraldson has a great question coming at you, because I know that you've developed that culture around your station, Redshift, and all and the yeah. He says the question for me is, how do you spill your crew culture into the other shifts and or stations, or do you need to?
Another great question and another great lesson I have had to learn. The easiest way that I can answer that, and probably maybe a little too stiffly, but honestly, I don't care. I can't care because I've tried. When I do try to get outside of my bubble and affect a bigger crowd, especially, you know, when you start to try to make changes or offer things to the department level, and you start getting maybe turned down or maybe ignored, it truly led to a lot of frustration, a lot of bitterness and resentment. And so I had to realize all I can control is my little circle, and that's it. Just the little circle of people that are comprised within my crew. And so, you know, that being said, when I say I don't care, that's not truly what I mean. What I mean is that my focus can't be on them. My focus has to be on my crew and what we're accomplishing. But what I hope is happening is that they see things. They see how well we're taking care of the rigs and the equipment. And they see how a jumped out hose load isn't okay with us.
Right.
And I hope that they don't just start taking advantage of that, but they start to maybe be inspired a little bit by it, which it could go either way. And honestly, I there's nothing we can do about it. You know, if that's what they're going to do is just kind of let us fix everything. And oh, at the end of the day, we're there to do a job. We're going to do a job, and we're not going to let things like that ruin our day right. anymore. We definitely have in the past, but we're just going to do the job that we need to do and then enjoy the rest of the day. But I hope that what we're doing starts to bleed into other places. You know, all you got to do is show people what we got going on. You know, see the interaction that we have, see the confidence that we have, see the competence we have into different skills, the connection and the close bond we have. And more times than not, that's going to start striking a little bit of interest in people. They're going to be like, man, you know, that looks like a fun crew to be on. Right. And that doesn't have anything to do with me. That's what we have accomplished together. But I think that's more of the goal for me, is to obviously focus on us. Don't worry about what happens outside of us. But at the same time, just having faith that a little bit's going to bleed out here and there. You know, we rotate through people quite a bit with personnel changes and things like that. And so
sure,
we're going to have people that are with us and then they're gone. And so I feel like that's another kind of way to share that, to spread that around a little bit. Hopefully when they leave us, they take what they got from us, they take what they got from the culture and the just everything that we do, and they make it better wherever they're going to go and kind of incorporate that. And so that's kind of how I now approach that. I haven't always approached it like that. I've been very irritated at other people outside of my crew for not doing as well as they should have done as far as just taking responsibility for, you know, the rig or the fuel tank or the hose, whatever.
Right.
But again, it's just one of those things where I've had to learn to take control of that as far as my emotions and our emotions, and not allow outside aspects to affect the day that we're going to have.
Beautiful. Control what you can control, lead by example, and let it bleed out where it can.
That's right.
I love it, man. More questions coming at you. Trying to figure out if I want to ask questions or go on to topics, but man, there's some good ones in here. We'll go with this one. This one also from Carpe Fuego. Do you, I like this question. I just like to hear people different takes on it. Do you think someone has to promote to make the biggest, most effective impact?
No, not at all. And I say that very, very firmly right now, because I have a lot of people telling me right now that I need to promote to the next level to make a bigger impact or a bigger difference. And I've truly struggled with that. For one, I don't want to go any further up right now. I love being a station officer. I love, you know, having that relationship with a crew that I'm with all the time, just everything that goes along with it. And I know you've talked about, you know, station officer is the best job. So I'm not, you know, not bringing anything that you don't understand or you don't know, but for me, I don't think I agree with that. I understand that the higher you go, you may have a little bit more power in what, you know, you say or what you bring up. But I think for me, the people at the bottom, and I mean firefighters, the captains, those people are the ones making the difference. Those people are the ones that are truly making the department better. You know, if we are doing our job, if we are getting ourselves in the best place for a positive outcome as we possibly can, if we are truly living up to the, you know, that oath that we took in being here, then great things are going to happen. That's what we do. We are tied to it every day. It's the people that are actually doing it. And so, you know, maybe if you're talking about from an informal spot to a formal, you know, officer role, yeah, there's some definite things that you're going to be able to accomplish more as a officer, as a, you know, a lieutenant or a captain, as opposed to a firefighter driver. But to me, I hope that no matter what your role is, I hope that no matter where you're at in your organization, you have people above you that are willing to listen and to take input and to be open-minded as to what the people below them are bringing forward. Because, you know, there's new things coming out all the time. There's new ways of doing everything. You know, if you're stuck in the ways that you learned 20 years ago in rookie school, you're so far behind. It's disturbing. It you've got to be fluid and flexible. And so I hope that the people that are making the good changes, the biggest difference, those boots on the ground, have some voices or have some people above them that are listening to those voices. Sometimes a lot of people don't. And right. You know, that sucks. I don't really have a good answer for that, except for just keep trying. But for me, some of the most influential people that I have been with at the fire service have been below me in rank. You know, one of the biggest mentors of my life that we'll get into later is less, or whatever you call it, is a rank or two below me. It has nothing to do with rank to me. It's the what you're doing with who you are that makes the biggest difference for me.
There you go. Straight to it. Man, so I want to go back to topics here. We'll look at topics. number imposter syndrome, staying engaged socially. Like you've got quite a presence with Crew First Culture and traveling and everything and speaking. But talk about imposter syndrome for you and the social aspect of social media, et cetera.
Yeah. So this is the part of the program where I start to walk the walk if I'm going to do it, you know, instead of just talking it, because this is that transparent, that vulnerable type area for me. For those that have kind of followed a little bit of what I'm doing, it's been very choppy, and I regularly, probably way too much, apologize for that, because I want it more consistent. I want to be able to have a little bit more of a better constant, consistent presence. But it's, there's so many things that go against that. And to speak of that, I'm truly amazed at how you can stay so consistent through the years. It's crazy to just to think, you know, okay, it's just one show a week, but dang, it's freaking hard. I guarantee you it's hard. So all respect for that to you. But for me, you know, it's so many different things, but you bring up imposter syndrome, and that's something that I intentionally sent to you because of, you know, I wanted to have some things that allowed me to express a little bit of the vulnerability that I'm speaking of. For me, you know, you talked about in just after the introduction, how it's been so long since I've been on. And to me, and I talked to you a little bit about it in that letter, but that has to do with imposter syndrome with me. You have actually several times kind of offered, hey, reach out to me, we'll set something up. And it wasn't that I didn't want to do it. I wanted to do it so bad, but it was like my mind was telling me, you gotta be bigger than what you are right now. You gotta have a better reach than what you have right now. You don't want to go on there and have three people log in. That's going to be embarrassing. And that is just an honest piece of that. It has nothing to do with you. That's all me. You know, there's nothing that anybody has done or said that would make that true. It's just my head making things more difficult for me. And so that's just one of those things where it's like I struggle with all the time. I get into these ruts to where, first of all, when I am doing a podcast, especially if it's just me talking, it's about something that I have an emotional tie to. It's about something that I truly feel like somebody out there may be able to benefit from. And so that being said, I get into these spells to where I don't have a message to share. You know, it's almost like it's being sucked out of me, and I'm not going to just get on and, you know, blow smoke just to say that, okay, I did a podcast, you know, here and there. And so for me, that is a very big piece of that struggle and staying consistent is it's almost like, you know, my mind is telling me there's so many, let's just talk about the fire service. There's so many great social media pages out there. There's so many podcasts out there. What are you doing that's any different than anything else? You know, why do you think that you have anything that is going to be worth listening to?
Right.
And that's a struggle that fight all the time. And it's embarrassing because I don't want to be like that. You know, I don't want to be somebody who compares myself to, you know, the different social media pages and podcasts, because I'm not like that. I'm not competing against anybody. I'm more than happy to help anybody out in that same area. But in my head, I am fighting against them to some make-believe battle to see if I am worthy enough to be able to own a little piece of it. And so again, it is embarrassing because I'm not that kind of person. I don't want to be that kind of person, but sometimes, you know, that war within that we all fight, no matter, yes, you know, what it is, it brings up pieces of us that we don't like at all. And that we have to really work through. And that's a big one.
No, it's crazy. Cause the more people I talk to and have these interviews with, and they may not even use the term imposter syndrome. Some don't even know the term, and what it means, but it's crazy. You know, they all have this, I don't want to say all, but most of them have this drive, this purpose, this vision, this mission, whatever term you want to put to share, to bring value to the fire service. They want to get it out there. And at the same time, there's this push pull of, I'm not worthy to share this thing. I'm not good enough to be doing this. You know what I'm saying? And it's this weird dichotomy going on. And in my own life, it's like, I'm one of the most blessed people in the fire service to do what I do and have the conversations with the people I get to have them with week in, week out. And I'm like, who am I to be doing this? You know, it's just unworthy. I don't unworthy almost feels like the best term for it. You know what I'm saying? And it's a tough thing to overcome in your own mind. And it's that inner voice that I think it's John Spear that always says, if you think I'm talking tough to you, you ought to hear how I talk to myself in my head. And I love that, man. It's like, and I think everybody's that way. If you actually sit down and talk about it, like, we're all broken in our own special ways.
Oh yeah, absolutely.
So absolutely love, you sharing that struggle, because it makes me know that I'm normal and not broken. Well,
and you know, you kind of bringing up some of that stuff also just even further cements how ridiculous it is, because you know as well as anybody, all of these people that so many people look up to that are so great to get to know and learn from and just even some just to sit back and listen to stories. 99.9% of them are amazing people that they're just people. They don't give a crap about, you know, how many followers they have or downloads or whatever. They're just people. They're just great people that are really good at what they do. And that's even like, it's even more telling as to, you know, what are you doing? You know, that's people are, the people that we deal with and the people that we're kind of in contact with, they're not like that. And so it's just so obvious that it's a me thing, but it's so hard to truly step away from.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, you talk about the comparison and the imposter syndrome. And I feel like I almost call them barriers to opportunity. And you could throw fear is huge.
Yeah,
absolutely huge. Fear of failure, fear of putting yourself out there, fear of rejection, whatever it is, anxiety, shame, all these different things. They're doing is they're keeping me from opportunities that are going to bring me further, that are going to help share the reach of the message that I've been given. And it's me. All of these things, none of them are my biggest enemy. The biggest enemy I have is me. And if I don't reach that full potential, if I don't truly make it to the level that I should and could, the only person I can blame is me. I can't allow myself to be victimized by those things or my excuses or anything. I've got to be the responsibility for all of that.
Super powerful, man. Absolutely love the mirror, man. Love the mirror. Jeremy is very humble but talented guy. He's been an invaluable addition to Rick George's cadre of tactical resiliency training. I sure appreciate his friendship and advice. That comes from Patrick Armitage. Next Level Extrication says, what's up, Jeremy? Good stuff. You are killing it. Yeah, absolutely. Lots of good comments coming in around us that we are no different and we are all in this together from Supa Coop. Dylan Clark, I like most of us want to leave an impact and ask myself the same thing all the time. 100% from Todd Torbett. There you go, man. It's coming at you. The journey to creating exceptional firehouse culture and why it's important. The 6-year journey at Station 3 and the process from going, your words, not mine, worst crew in the department to an excellent crew.
Yeah, and that's You know, we touched on a little bit of that through some of the questions.
Right.
But that's kind of, it's almost like it's a true journey that you see a movie out of. You know, these people are taking this huge trek through the mountains or whatever. That's what it's felt like for me. And, you know, again, like I've said before, there's been so many mistakes made in that journey, so many just learning from bad choices and bad this and that. So many times we would be making progress and something caused us to just, the freaking bottom falls out. So many times we would get some momentum going and it would just disappear. And of course you throw, you know, the infamous COVID years, the C word years into that whole mix. And man, it's a freaking nightmare. But to look back on it now, just to see, you know, who we have all become, who the crew has become, the lessons that I've learned. I feel like, you know, and this just goes back to my story. I feel like that particular situation has given me so much material to add value to other people that I can't let it go to waste. And so, you know, a lot of things have happened in that 6 years. To be honest now, you know Justin, my driver, Justin Mann, he recently left me. So I am now the only founding member of that original crew when I came on there, the last one standing. But the journey that has taken to get here and the people that have been involved in that journey has truly been just, it's been so impressive to see that and to be able to look back now and think that, you know, all of those things that I had such a problem, or well, I won't say all, a lot of the things that I had a really big problem with kind of getting over that hill, over that peak, you know, we're on the other side now. Does that mean right. We're perfect? No, I'm going to throw that out there really quick. No, but when we do encounter those days, like I brought up earlier, that day that I kind of dropped the ball and we didn't do anything, we come back the next shift and it's all back to normal. You know, it's not just a freaking, the walls are crumbling every time one little mistake happens, which is what it used to be. And it used to be so stressful, and man, it was so heavy on me, because I'm somebody that is really just habitually struggled with consistency in different areas. And so when it comes to strong wills against things that I'm trying to accomplish at a consistent rate, man, it was a test for sure. And a lot of times I lost that test. I failed that test. But looking back now, it's definitely so good to see the rewards of all that work. And just to kind of a few pieces of that for anybody out there that may be in that situation, some things that kind of helped us. I think that, you know, I talked earlier about your identity, coming up with who you are and who you stand for, or what you stand for.
Right.
Identity was a big piece for us as a crew. That was one of the first things that we kind of did together, was we created a station logo and started putting it on shirts, and later it evolved into coins. And so that was now something that, you know, it bonded us together a little bit. It gave us something that was a common piece. It almost started to give us something to fight for. And that's what that identity for me truly does for us. After you start establishing it, is it gives us something to fight for. If you don't have an identity as a crew, what are you doing? You know, which way are you going? You know, who are we? What, nobody knows, and nobody really has any say so in standing up for this or that. And so that was a big piece for us, is really establishing that. You know, we got into some helmet stickers, just, and again, you know, every time I bring this up, it's just a little sticker. It doesn't cost hardly anything, but now we've kind of tweaked it to where it truly means something. It has meaning behind it. You have to show us that you want to be a part of our crew to earn that helmet sticker. And so it's now a piece of our culture. It's an artifact. It's a piece of our identity.
Nice.
And so just building these little things is just little wins and being persistent through the losses and the failures and just hanging on to those wins and just trying to drag yourself forward little by little. It will take a long time. There is no freaking shortcut for changing a culture around, for making a positive difference in culture. But every bit of the work is worth it, every bit of it. So that's kind of the shortest answer I can do with that. I will say that if you do have questions about that stuff, I'm more than happy to talk about it, after the show or whatever, just because everybody's situation is so unique. If I'm just throwing some stuff out here about my situation, it might touch on a little bit of what you're dealing with, but it might not. And so right. I'm definitely willing to kind of be that help for anybody that's struggling through that for sure.
That's beautiful, man. Starting with that identity, right back to where we started the conversation. Start with that identity. And I love what you said, man. Because if you're not fighting for that identity, what are you fighting for? Man, it's beautiful. I love it. I might have my soundbite. I got it circled and timestamped. Take a lot of notes while you're talking. And I try to pay attention while I take my notes. I love it, man. I absolutely do. I got some broader questions. I got some ones that are just like, whoa, I don't know if I want to dig into that yet. From Mitchell Lisco, from James, he says, Jeremy, if there was one thing, this is a broad one. This is kind of what I call a soft toss. You can crush it if you want. If there's one thing that you would change about the fire service or culture right now, no questions asked, what would it be?
The fire service in general, what would I change?
You can take it whatever direction you want.
I think that we're seeing some really great strides forward. I think that the work that all of these people on listening right now, all of the people that are putting great content out there on social media and training all the time and just staying up, I think that the fire service is becoming so much better than it was just a few years ago. But I feel like maybe the one thing that is being overlooked or maybe even underestimated is, again, we're going to get right back into it, to what we've touched on several times, is what we're truly here for. And I know, you see for them a lot. Right out of the gate, I don't think I am going against that. I think it's awesome that just that, that saying, just to kind of get people's mind wrapped around that. But for me, if we can't allow that to just stop at the citizens, we can't allow ourselves to think that, okay, we're here for them. That means that we have to be focused on the citizens. Yes, that's a piece of it. Again, I'm not fighting that. Okay. But for me, my for them is my citizens that I serve, my crew members that I work with every day, and my family that are home waiting for me when I go home. That is my for them. And so why I bring that up is that if we just put ourselves in that box of just focusing on the citizens, we miss such a great opportunity to help each other as a crew, to be able to connect with each other, to be able to be there for each other as a crew, because this job is hard. This job beats you down in every way possible. It physically, mentally, emotionally, it will beat you down. And that's only the job. If you have some stuff going on at home, you're already worn down before you come to the job. You're already mentally and emotionally exhausted, maybe physically exhausted. So if our only focus and our only concern is just the citizens, we're missing a big piece as to what it takes to provide that for the citizens. Because if our people are broken and our people are not getting the help they need and not having the support they need, then those citizens aren't going to be taken care of. I don't care how much you train. We are not going to be in the right state of mind to take care of the people that we're supposed to. And that goes for coming home as well. You know, if we're not doing what we can to take care of ourselves and have the support, maybe if it's not people at work, if it's our friends, if somebody lucky like me, I now have a group of people that we call a tribe that I truly can depend on. But if you don't have that, we're coming home empty and we are not having anything to give to our family. And they are struggling because of that. And so that I think I would definitely maybe shed a little bit more light on is that, you know, we are here because somebody needs our help. That's just how it is. Somebody will always need our help. That is the job. But if we're truly doing what we need to be doing with the opportunity we have to be as a piece of this fire service life and family, we could do so much more with, you know, helping the people we work with, helping our family. Just the all-encompassing piece of that. And definitely not make it about us, because as soon as we make it about us, we're failing everything.
Right.
We're failing the citizens. We're failing the crew, the department, the fire service. We're failing ourselves. And so for me, I think maybe that's what I would say, is just really, really going deeper. You know, yes, we are here to do that. We are here for a service. We are here to serve people. We are here to protect and all that. But there's so much more possible if we just reached out and started taking advantage of that.
That's hard to beat, man. And like you say, when you start off talking about for them and you seem to take anything away, like I know you're not taking anything away from the mission focus on the victims and them, but I absolutely get what you're saying. There's a hierarchy to it, and it's so easy. If we don't take care of our people, it basically ties right back into the name crew first culture.
That's exactly why I picked that. Yep, absolutely.
Without putting the above the citizen, but and that's that dichotomy of that existence. You know what I'm saying? Yep. Keeping the priority first, but understanding the importance of it all.
And I think since you brought it up, I would like to maybe
go
say a little bit about that, because I have heard a few people kind of question that, you know, as to what's the true motive behind it. And it just goes back to my firm belief of the best opportunity for my people to take care and give the best care and be in the best place for success is if I'm taking care of them. That is the best way I can guarantee that. If I take care of my people, if I put them first, if I show them that I care about them, that I support them, that I'm right there with them, then they're going to do every freaking thing they can to accomplish whatever mission we have. They're going to do it just to try to make me look good to others.
Absolutely.
I mean, they're going to make my job easier. All I got to do is take care of them. And that in turn gives the citizens the best care, the best, you know, competent firefighter showing up. And so that's kind of where it came from.
And I love man, Eric Saylor. He's coming back on the scrap here, I think next week, maybe. And amazing. I asked the old question, the best job to be in the fire service, you know, the old five questions for firefighters. And I love his answer to this day. It still sticks out to me, because he put it this way, and I'll be quick in my recap of it and probably butcher it a little bit. But basically he said the job of the firefighters is to take care of the citizen, the victim. And then the job of the company officer is to take care of the person that takes care of the victim. And then the job of the chief, the battalion chief, is to take care of the person that takes care of the person that takes care of the victim. And when you start looking at it that way, you start really realizing. And as a company officer, and I think you'll agree with this because I love it, it's the best way you can take care of your people is to make sure that they know how to do their jobs competently and efficiently, and they know the district that they're operating in. And so all of that just ties so beautifully in together.
Yeah.
Man, sure. I do love it. I do love it, brother. You get me fired up. You got me fired up going. All right, I'm going to say, well, let me see if I got any more questions in here. And any other topics you want to hit on that I've glossed over or missed?
Oh, yeah. I mean, there's lots of stuff we talk about.
You hit me. You hit me with what you got. I don't want to cut you off.
Well, I think that another thought that I want to throw out there, and maybe it is bouncing around some of the same stuff, but it's just another way to look at it. But what's more important? Is it what we're gaining from a situation, or is it what we're becoming because of a situation? And so that's something that I think we all need to really just take some time and ask ourselves. And I'll say it again, just to get everybody to really wrap their head around what is more important, what we're gaining from a situation. So like, you know, our physical things that we're gaining, money, respect, you know, whatever, or is it who we are becoming because of a situation? And so I hope that most or all people say that, well, it's who you're becoming. Well, okay. If that's the case, then that's what we truly need to start measuring ourselves against. You know, it's not the things that make us valuable. It's not the money that makes us valuable. It's not the followers and the outspread reach that make us valuable as people. It's what we have to give others is what makes us valuable. It's that story that we've talked about. It's that servant heart, you know, just being able to share and develop people around you. That's what truly adds that value to people. And so when you have that, I hope that you want to share it and add value to others because of that. And so I just thought that's just one of those things that I had written down just in case we kind of bump around on something is that question, because I think that a lot of these situations we go through that are tough, that are hard, that just really beat us up, a lot of it has to do with our perspective. Our perspective of those situations. You know what I heard? I can't remember who was it said it, but they said we need to stop spending time trying to figure out why we're going through these situations and wondering what the reason is and the purpose is of this, and just focus on getting through it. And then once we're through it, that's where the blessings come from, or that's where they show up. So if we're spending all this energy trying to sit here and, you know, why am I having to do this again? Why do I have to keep fighting this fight? Well, just make it through, because you're not going to get those answers. You might make up something and have something that keeps you satisfied for a little while, but you're not going to have any true answers until you're through it. And then sometimes you'll be able to see why. You know, that's been some of the coolest times in my life are the things that I've not really wanted to go through, or the hard times that I had no choice, but I was going through them no matter what. And once you get past them, you look back and you're like, man, I see now what came of that. That was a crappy situation and I'd never want to do it again. But look at what has happened since then. Look at what truly has occurred because of me going through that. And so I think just perspective, helping ourselves through things like that by just monitoring where our perspective is and trying to stay as positive as we can.
Boom. Yeah, people are saying, I'm going to have to download this and listen to it all over again. No, absolutely. I love hearing that too. But no, there's been so many bombs tonight, so many truth bombs, so many introspective bombs, vulnerability bombs, culture bombs. Valerie Tessier coming at you says, with your recent observations, Crew First Culture and everything else and stuff you're going through and built and learned from, do you think there is a real thirst for a culture shift in the fire service on a larger scale?
Absolutely. I mean, anybody that has been to any kind of like an outside conference, outside training, anything that has been held on neutral ground, you see very quickly that there are a lot of people hungry to be a part of something special. There are a lot of people hungry to be something more than what they are and to truly grab a hold of the opportunity to make a difference and to make that cultural change and be a part of that cultural change. Right. I mean, that's one of the saddest things is you're when you talk about the stuff that I talk about, that you talk about, you were approached and, you know, messaged by a lot of people in bad situations. All they want to do is be in a better situation. Yeah. All they want to do is love their job. All they want to do is be better at their job. But there's these people and these, you know, whatever it is that are keeping that from happening. And so to me, and I know a lot of people say it, and I don't even know who to attribute it to, but if this job is not fun, then you're working hard to make it that way. You won't have to do anything really to enjoy this job, and it's going to be fun. So if you're struggling to really just come to work, if you're not loving to be a firefighter anymore, something is really wrong, because this job is so much fun. It is so great to be a part of. And so, yeah, absolutely. There are definitely people that are standing firm on that, you know, that old rock that they've been on those old traditions, old techniques and skills and equipment and all that. And they're like, you know, you can pry it out of my cold dead fingers type mentality. And, you know, whatever, I if that's what you're going to be, okay. Again, going back to it, I can't allow that to affect my momentum and my drive and my passion. But what I am going to do is I'm going to veer around you and go find somebody else, because I promise you, there is not a shortage of people out there that want so badly to be a part of something special. And that just shows you that it's possible. It's possible to create something special where you're at. It's not going to be easy, but it is possible.
Boom. There you go. Just another quick bomb. Just to answer a question. All right, I'm moving on to Booker books. I love reading. You know me. I absolutely love reading. And I always ask, Booker books that you think firefighters should be reading. I love hearing new ones. I love finding new ones. Or, just hearing your thoughts on books.
Andy, I feel like this is such a question that there's no way that I'm going to say a book that you haven't heard or that somebody hasn't said. I'll go back to just a few that
there's classics and things that stick out above the crowd for a reason, man. There's reason.
I will say this or I'll say these just because they've made the biggest impact on my life. The first one actually came from you. And this is way, way back, early scrap. And now I'm going blank. The Arbor Institute. What is their first?
Leadership, Self-Deception.
Yes. Leadership and Self-Deception.
Great book.
I never heard of that before you started talking about it. I have now listened to it probably three or four times. I've got a couple extra copies that I'm more than happy to give, you know, people here and there. It's truly an incredible book that helped me really realize how screwed up our perception of everybody else is. It is so twisted and unbalanced, and it's an incredible book. If you have not read that one, definitely read that one.
No, it's in my top five. I love that book. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Sure. Great call out.
One of the newer, and it's been a while since I've read it still, but one of the newer ones that really was good was, Brené Brown, Daring to Lead, or Dare to Lead.
Anything by Brené Brown, but yeah, absolutely.
Really, really good book as well. And, you know, that, again, just provides some different perspectives on life. And that's what I love so much, is just getting a different viewpoint. And on that, I don't even want to bring it up because I'm going to screw it up too. But
Dare to Lead, just so I can get the title right. Yeah, Dare to Lead.
Dare to Lead, okay, yeah. But Yeah, I think that's two of the biggest ones that really kind of made me stop and think about things differently and look at things differently, especially leadership and self-deception. I'll say another one, Arbinger Institute. I think, am I saying that right?
Arbinger.
Okay.
It may be Arbinger. I could be saying it wrong. I don't know, but yeah,
you're close. Outward Mindset is another one by them. It's very good as well.
And that's the sequel, kind of right?
Dealing. What's that?
Was that the sequel to Leadership and Self-Deception?
Yes.
Because that's the one I haven't read. I love the first book so much, but I've yet to get that. It's on my list, but my list is so long, I'm never going to catch up. I'm never going
to
catch up.
It's still kind of dealing with that. You know, we're trying to turn our focus from being inward to turning our focus outward to those around us. And so it's very good as well.
The books he said, everybody, was Leadership and Self-Deception by the Arbinger Institute, Outward Mindset, also by the Arbinger Institute, and Dare to Lead by Brené Brown. So there you go. Just so everybody's clear, because people were asking, what books did he say? So I wanted to be clear. So well, we were back and forth on them, so we probably weren't very. Love it. Okay, so that takes us to one of my favorite parts of every scrap. Yeah, culture code. Chief Hovelman chimed in, said culture code. Absolutely. That's also one of my top five, along with Leaders Eat Last. Culture Code and Leaders Eat Last are almost the same book. Just they approach it and hit it from different angles. Now you get me. Everybody's getting me talking about books. The 5Q3, man. The 5 Questions for Firefighters version 3.0. It's the third iteration asked over the history of the scrap. The questions have no correct answers. They're completely 100% your opinions. There are no right answers, but the points are arbitrary, and they're passed out by me with the help of the audience as they get thrown at you. So my question for you, first of all, is, Jeremy Sanders, are you ready for the 5 Questions for Firefighters version 3.0?
Always.
Here we go. Number one, what is the skill that has carried you through your fire service career?
As far as skill, I think that is definitely something that I had to sit and kind of think about. I don't know that skill is the right word for it, but just persistence is something that I think I can lean on a lot. You know, being able to weather the storms that are out there, and no matter if I am failing, no matter if I am making mistakes or losing momentum that I've gained, or you know, just stagnant and in a rut, having that persistence to be able to keep going, and sometimes it's beyond me. You know, it requires other people to get that moving. It requires people to help me get inspired again. But it goes right back to that persistence of just keeping going. There, you know, even if I'm being truly honest about answering that question, it's almost like the fire service and the life that I lived for about 20 years, just they would not have allowed me to make it through if it weren't for persistence. You know, some of the things that we as a family had to make it through, I don't understand still how well, you know, we got to the other side, but it was that persistence to keep on going and stay with it and know that we are doing the right thing. Even though there may be somebody out there that does not agree with it, even though there may be a lot of people out there that have other ideas of what you should be doing or whatever, having the persistence to stay with your priorities and your the things you stand on, that's truly been something that I've had to lean on quite a bit.
I got, let's go. Solid answer. Max points. Yes. Persistence, all caps, no quit mentality. I love that. Max points 100. Can't stop. Won't stop. Max points for sure. Knowing what it takes to maintain your purpose. Dude, there you go. I love it. You're out the gate with max points solid from the audience. And I agree. Number two, what is the most important? And I'm kind of interested in this answer, even though we've talked about soft skills a lot of this whole scrap, which is awesome. It's something I love to talk about. But what is the most important soft skill for a person to possess in a leadership position?
Man, I feel like five is good. You know, what are the five soft skills? I think that's more.
That's easy. That's too easy.
Yeah. To me, I got to go to humility. And maybe that's just because that's something that I feel like is that that's just what I focus on. But, you know, I would love to say authenticity. I would love to say a courage to move past your fears, things like that. But it all comes back to humility. Everything always filters back to humility. If I am allowing myself to be teachable and to be open-minded and to learn new things, it's only because I'm humble enough to say, this person knows something that I don't, and I need to learn it. If I'm doing something that allows others around me to take the credit for and to be built up and to grow in their career, it's because I'm humble enough to take a back seat and allow them to take that credit and to get that, you know, those good things. Everything always comes back to humility for me. And I think it's so important. And, you know, it goes into the vulnerability too. You can't be vulnerable with others if you aren't humble enough to truly be honest. And, you know, another one that I really love is authenticity. I don't really enjoy being around people that I don't feel are authentic. It makes me uneasy. It makes me just, I don't know. It makes my skin crawl type thing. And if it wasn't for that humility, that very well could be me, you know. Mm. That humility keeps me grounded in who I am. And it helps me to understand this is who I am. If you try to go beyond that, you're kind of stepping on some itchy ground right here, and you're not really being authentic. And so always going back to humility, I think humble leaders are amazing people to work for. You know, if you can add in a little bit of strength to that, and a little bit of confidence to that, it takes you so far beyond to that next level, but it starts with humility.
Oh, dude. I don't have to look at the comments because max points for humility, period. It is the bedrock of leadership, 100%. It is the soft skill, in my personal opinion, and I pass out the points. But that being said, humility for the win, max points from Steve Kaiser from Down Under. Taylor Shepherd, blessed are the humble, for they shall inherit the earth. The Bible says max points. James Michalisco, max points. Goes back to imposter syndrome, max points. Max points for the whole answer. No, absolutely. Humility required. Yeah, there is no doubt about it, man. Two for two, killing it. Number three, what is your favorite fire service tradition?
I think it's the games. I love just the camaraderie, the competition of the games. And I say games because that is so fluid and it changes so much. You know, just looking through the 21 years that I've been at Edmond, it's been volleyball, it's been wiffle ball, it's been well, as much as people would flip their lid now, it has been airsoft fights in the around the outside of the station by the street. It's been pickleball and cornhole, whatever it is. Man, that has been some of my favorite times at work. And it is so crazy to say that. Playing games has been my favorite time at work. That's the job, you know.
Yeah.
That's part of the job, and we get to do this. It's amazing. I don't know if people outside the fire service truly understand what kind of a gig we got going on, but I love it. And those games have... Man, they have created some great relationships. They've created some great healthy competition amongst crew members and crews. They've done so much in my career that I've seen. and been a part of. I would say that that's kind of my answer for that one.
Dude, I love it. Yeah, laugh is one of my L's. It's the fifth L, and I absolutely believe in the downtime, earned downtime, especially after you've taken care of business. You know, you earn it. But man, it is one of the strengths of the American Fire Service. I love your answer. Max points for Airsoft from Carpe Fuego. there you go. Football, baseball, human, hungry hippo in the bay for the win. Now, the ingenuity.
Gonna have to look into that one. That sounds really.
The ingenuity of firefighters to have fun in the earned downtime and sometimes unearned downtime, let's be honest, but is absolutely an amazing, amazing time. That makes it 3 for 3. Number four, who are the four people you would put on your Mount Rushmore of the fire service?
I thought it was five. You sure it's not five? You trying to rip me off?
I hope it's absolutely four.
Oh, now, I came into this thing, it was five. So
you got to do a fast edit. You get to do an honorable mention.
All right. I'll do that. I think that this is something that truly has a special place for me. I'm so thankful that you have this question because I think that there's so many people out there. The only thing I hate about it is there's so many people that have helped me to be where I am right now that I hate not being able to thank everybody. Or put everybody in that spot. But there are definitely, I will say five, there are definitely four or five people that I would do that. For one, I have to put Justin first. I mentioned him earlier, and I said I was going to mention him later, and this is what I was talking about. I would not have accomplished anything in my life and in my career that has happened in the past 5 years if it wasn't for him. He was the spark that lit the fire again inside me. I wasn't a completely checked out, lazy, jaded person, firefighter, but I was freaking coasting, absolutely coasting and happy with it and thinking that I was doing good. He fired me up. He challenged me to be more. He somehow has gotten to where he even kind of behind the scenes got me speaking in front of people, which I've been scared of my entire life. And now I love it. But absolutely, number one, I would say it has to be Justin Mann.
I don't want to interrupt. I don't want to break your flow. Yep. But number one, you can check him out. Scrap number 45. You can hear Justin speak in scrap number one of the originals. But go ahead. So sorry, Jeremy. I wanted to mention that.
No, you're fine. Number
Justin
two.
Justin a plug for his scrap. So
that's right. Number two, I would have to put Brian Brush, just being lucky enough to work with him for a few years. I hate that, it wasn't longer than that, but I'm so thankful that it allowed me to form a friendship with him and a mentor relationship with him. And, having somebody like that you could reach out to ask questions about kind of the path you're taking and whatever, it's so incredible. He's definitely helped me in many ways to really form me into the person I am today. You mentioned his comment earlier when we first started about kind of getting me up in front of the recruit class. That was literally, what I say about Justin starting me, that was kind of in a formal setting when I got up in front of that recruit class. That was really the first time I've ever spoken in front of anybody. And yeah, it might've only been 10, 12 people, but that was almost like an aha moment. Like, man, that felt good. I had something important that I had to say. I got up there, I said it, and it felt good. So definitely number two would be with him. I think that number three, and he could easily be one of the top as well, but Rick George. I have been talking with Rick for several years over the phone, texting, phone conversations. I had him on the podcast, so got to know him pretty well, but never met him. And still, he was somebody that was so impactful in my life. And now, having the chance to meet him earlier this year And now I still don't know how. I don't know how things like this work out, but now I have the opportunity to be a part of his instructor group. And yeah, that awesome, it still blows me away. I don't know why I am with that group. I don't know, but I'm so thankful. But he is an amazing, amazing person. And the amount of times that he is, and I have no idea. I know a lot that I've seen, and it's a lot. And I know there's so many more, but the amount of times that people reach out to him for either help for themselves or help for somebody that's on their crew. And he just does it. He finds the resources. He gives the information, whatever. It truly blows me away at how many people he has impacted.
Oh yeah.
And that inspires me to do what I can to be my version of that. And so another huge one.
Yeah, a lot of people saying that. Yeah, Samantha, we know why you're with that group. Don't let that imposter syndrome win. I think Rick George is a pretty good judge of character, to say the least. Laugh out loud. Yeah, there's a reason you're teaching with him, brother. So go on. Sorry, I keep breaking your flow, but
go ahead. You're fine. These are things you don't have to really think about too much. I mean, but I think that, you know, the next two, and I'm going to say two. Yeah, you call it an honorable mention, whatever. You could take some points off, but Benjamin Martin has been huge as well. I remember listening to a podcast and hearing him being interviewed for the first time. And it was like I was listening to somebody tell the thoughts that were going through my head, but a lot smarter and with a lot more answers. And I was like, dude, this guy, he knows what I'm going through. He knows how to fix what I'm going through. It's amazing. And now to get to know him, and he is so ridiculously smart, and, you know, a few months away from being Dr. or actually Doc Martin is what we'll call him.
That's what we're going to call him. Absolutely. Doc Martin.
But man, just somebody that I can always ask questions that a lot of people, they just haven't experienced it. You know, if I'm writing something or if I'm, you know, thinking through some deeper things, the guy irritates the crap out of me because he has completely screwed up my mentality for so many different things, like, you know, expectations. And he was one of the reasons about the whole vision and mission thing. He thinks it's so much of a different level that it completely screws my thinking up and I have to start over. But definitely somebody that has really played a key role in my life. And honorable mention or fifth or whatever you want to call it is, and I, you know, I almost hate to say this because it's like, okay, you're kissing up to the host, but truly you have played a huge role in how I'm sitting here as well. You know, you were the first person to ever, you know, grab a hold of some of my writing and, you know, put it on your earlier website and kind of give me that experience of seeing it out there. You've had lots of, you know, just coaching moments with me and sitting down and conversating with me and all these things. And so I definitely don't want to leave you off that list because you have been a piece of that. So I think that something I want to bring up with that being said, with that being the list, is there's only two people on that list of five that I really physically met before I even heard about them. The other three I never knew of until I just kind of either social media or listened to podcasts or whatever. And so that just why I want to bring that up is because, man, mentors and inspirations and people that we look up to, they don't have to be people that we're with. You know, we can have so many great opportunities to be mentored by people that might not ever even know who the heck we are, but there's some great people out there. And thankfully I've been lucky enough to meet the people and to really establish those relationships.
Dude,
going back to yeah, they're real.
That's right. Yeah, man.
That's
absolutely.
Right. That's,
I got this. That's along a with special the letter, thing, I would, man. I should break the letter out and read it to everybody, but I'd have to go find it in my mess of an office, man. But no, and it's a numbered coin. And I'm very, very proud of it. When I got to sit down with you, I don't know if you remember the day. I'm sure you do. At On the Border, we sat down and you did, we had that. I don't know how long it was. A couple of hours just sitting there discussing. Man, it was powerful for me. And thank you. I don't know what to say to that because I don't belong. On that mountain of, but I appreciate the, well, I don't, yes, that, I want to.
So you say that, but one more point before you award me points. Maybe I bump my status up here. The fact is those five people, they did something. That's it. They put effort into me. They saw something in me. They invested in me. And so it all comes down to a choice, you know. Are you choosing to invest in others, or are you choosing to okay, not right now because I don't feel like it, or I just right. I don't like doing that, or I'm not a big people person. Well, just looking at the effect that it's had on my life because people chose to invest in me. And so I will say that to everybody out there, invest in the people around you because true. You can never fully grasp the impact that it can have on so many levels and wavelengths.
That's awesome, man. Easy Max points. You put me on honorable mention on Mount Rushmore. No, but seriously, people said Max points throughout. So it's not just me. Someone, Carpe Fuego, said Max damn points. No, absolutely, brother. And I want to say this because it really is an awesome, and not because he said my name, and I appreciate, I want to say humbly, thank you. I'm very proud, very humbled by that. But I mentioned Justin Mann, episode number 45 of The Scrap. So all the other people he mentioned, Brian Brush, one of the originals, number 23, on The Scrap. He's also coming back soon. Rick George. That's how I met Rick George. The original time was an accidental meetup, and he came on The Weekly Scrap number 17. He was the seventh guest to ever come on The Scrap, man. It might have been sixth because I think there was a single in there where I didn't have a guest. So anyway, Rick George is number 17 and number 152. So if you want to find these people he was talking about, if you don't already know their names and haven't already seen their scraps, Ben Martin was number 46, also very early in The Scrap, and recently number 175.
I was going to say, you had one recent, more recent.
Yes. Yep. And so there you go. I wanted to put all those episodes out there because the people he's talking about, they're amazing people, man. Absolutely. Thank you. Final question. You've crushed it. Heavy fire and searchable space. Would you rather be assigned to the nozzle or first in on that VES?
So this is where the wheels fall off. You know, I've done so good. I haven't got myself in trouble. I've watched what I said, but this is something that I'm going to completely flip on. You know, You asked me this, of course, the first time I was on. You asked us this during the Fire Up OKC, you know, in January. And my answer was on the hose line, putting out the fire. But just the past couple of days, I'm gonna completely change my answer to that, and I'll tell you why. I wanna have that opportunity to VES. I wanna have that opportunity to search because honestly, I know that if that situation comes up, if there is heavy fire and there is also searchable space, we are going to be that crew that is going to search that space. I don't know. I can't guarantee that coming out of everybody. And I'm not trying to say anything bad about anybody or any department, but I know we will be the crew that gets the job done if that is the case. And I know that that is going to be the best opportunity for the citizen that could be in there. And so I will change my answer completely and say, I want to be, if it's assigned or not, if we see that searchable space, we're going to be the people that are searching that if we don't have something else going on. So
I love
it. That's where I'll say that.
And here's what I'll say about it. It takes humility to come in and change your answer. It takes humility to admit that. Exactly. That
no, I'm an awesome engine guy. That's all we have is engines. So it's hard to step away from that hose line. But you know, it is what it is.
I love it, brother. You got max points, 5 for 5. Easy max points. Crushed it on the episode. Absolutely. Smoothbore Cartel said confident, and I like it. Max points, life safety first. That's the mission from James Michalisco. Timothy Wood said life safety is the job. 1 max points. Valerie Tessier, one of my favorite scraps. Infinite points. You got an infinite point.
Dang.
You can't do better than that.
That's humbling, man.
Max point. No, brother, you crushed it. Absolutely crushed it. Okay, that officially makes it 205. I can't believe I'm saying that. 205. I say that every time I hit another episode done. 205 scraps in the books. Jeremy Sanders, thank you for sharing an amazing evening with me and the audience on YouTube, on Facebook, on LinkedIn. I don't know if anybody actually watches on Twitter, but it's out there floating in the Twitter or the X sphere, I guess it's called now. If someone wants to get a hold of you, reach out to you, what's the best way to do so?
So I tried my best to make it as simple as possible. Pretty much everything I have is Crew First Culture. So if you're looking for an email, it's crewfirstculture@yahoo.com. And that is with a one, crew1stculture@yahoo.com. Facebook is Crew First Culture. Instagram, got a website that's crewfirstculture.com, to where you can go on and listen to any of the podcasts that we have. Also have linked pretty much every podcast I've been on as a guest as well, to kind of help them as well. And just got a shop that sells some stickers and stuff like that. But
that's
pretty much it, man. My cell phone is on the website. It's pretty much everywhere as well. It's 405-702-2134. So I love talking fire and helping people out. And I'm not always the greatest about prompt responses, but I will do my best to get back to you for sure. But I thank everybody out there so very much for spending this time with me. And thank you for allowing me to share my message. You know, this is what I have to share, and like it or don't like it, that's what I have. And for you allowing me to do it on this platform with this reach is a blessing.
Oh, brother, your message comes from your heart. That authenticity you talked about, it's there, and you deserved to be on here way sooner than this, and I should have made it happen sooner. And that's on me, on my book, and my terrible, terrible booking. So thank you for sharing your evening with us. Now, I hope you'll stick around for the after party. I tell people it's 20 minutes, no matter what. The vigilantes get to come in there. They get to critique you, pick you apart, throw insults at you. We'll get to that in a minute. Vigilantes, I will post the link as soon as the scrap is over. I'll post the link. We'll be in there, and we'll get to critique Jeremy. It's a lot of fun. please go become a vigilante if you're not right now. It's the best way to support the scrap. There's exclusive forums, exclusive after parties, exclusive swag, exclusive discounts. It's all awesome. The badass scraps continue of 2023. I was pulling up the lineup just so I could get it right. Eric Sailors next week coming in to talk about nothing but mass casualty response. Intentional mass casualty response, specifically active shooter, and all the work he's been doing on that. One of the smartest firefighters I know, coming back on the scrap to talk about that specifically. James Johnson, the week after, he missed mega scrap building construction because he was in a car wreck. So he's coming on to talk building construction. One of the sexiest men I know, Jason Hovelman, Chief Hovelman, coming back one more time to discuss leadership culture, all the things that I love to discuss and dig deep into, followed by Clay McGee, then Jonah Smith, and then Jeff Rothmeyer. It is a packed up August into September. It is looking good. I'm so excited. And there's more after that. But enough of that. Anything else I need to announce? Scrap after party, I said it. Private group said it. Jeremy, I will see you in the after party. And hear your feedback and thoughts. Audience, you make the scrap magical. There's nothing compares to the questions you guys send. Kyle pulling them out, taking the time to get your questions and throw them out there. Kyle Romig is one of the best in the business. Sam, behind the scenes, the technical guru who makes sure that it runs off mostly without a hitch. Most of the hitches are because of stuff that I do to mess it up. That's it. Thank you so much for making the scrap magical. Thank you for tuning in live. I hope the tones stay silent unless it is burning. Everybody, stay safe out there.
Thanks for listening to the Weekly Scrap. Please subscribe and please share. We'll see you at the next episode.